If we hit this thing at 50 miles per hour, our trajectory will clear 10 feet. Easy.
No way. Absolutely not.
Kyle, we'll go 60 just to be certain.
We're going back. This is impossible.
No.
Are you sure?
No.
Of course I'm sure. With physics, I'm always sure. Yes.
I'm driving.
I don't think you guys heard me. This is my car, and we're not going to be jumping over any rivers.
Kyle, it's 10 feet. Bob Hope could jump this in a golf cart. Look, I can spit across this gap.
Yeah. Well, better make it 75.
Okay.
This is Commander's HQ. My name is Nate. With me is Brandon.
Hello.
And Chris.
Hey.
Yeah, Alex is not with us tonight. His girlfriend, his fiance's car got wrecked, so they got to deal with that situation. So, unfortunately, we're not going to have Alex this week. We'll see him next week. Other announcements. This is Chris last week on the show, but other than that, I'll start out with Chris this week. So how has your last 3 weeks been that we haven't recorded?
Last 3 weeks have been nothing but work and school, getting ready for finals and stuff, getting clinicals out of the way, a lot of work. The only magic that I've done is like Thursday night EDH.
For a little bit of break.
That's pretty much it. Everything else is just nothing but work, school, and sleep.
Yeah. What you been up to, Brandon?
I've been working on my cube that I built.
I drafted it.
Yeah, it was I'm less than 100 cards. I think I'm about 90 cards away from having the physical thing.
Yeah, I was
ready to draft.
I was looking at your cube and there's a few things I'm changing in mine now. I saw some stupid concepts.
Yeah, I have it's a silver black cube, but it's less of just a good stuff cube. Like, I worked really hard to make archetypes in each of the two color pairs.
Yeah.
The cards that I chose work in multiple
colors. Oh, yeah. Me and Shane were looking at it last night, and the internet connection at work messed up, so we didn't get to finish the draft. But at one point, we had Murderous Red Cap and Quill Spike together. That's dumb. And we had a sack out. I think we ended up drafting a sack out, too.
Yeah.
So we had a sack out, a Quill Spike, and a Murderous Red Cap. I'm like, this is dumb.
See, and this is why I need other people to test things, because I haven't seen that interaction, and that's ridiculous.
It is. What was it? Bloodthrone Vampire, and Quill Spike, and the Murderous Red Cap, which you're
that's
playing.
A really big
Quill Spike? It's a Jund deck, basically. So all it is... Well, it's not really infinite because you still have to pay the mana.
But it's like... A really big Quill Spike and a really big Vampire,
like,
and you've done a lot of damage.
I have
so
like
you're probably getting through.
Yeah, I have like 5 green mana on the board, and I'm going to sack Murderous Red Cap to the the Blood Throne, and then it comes back into play and hurts you, and then I remove the counter, and I just do that. It's ridiculous. Like, we found that, it's like, that's a stupid Jund combo. So... Yeah, I like it. Like, that's part of the reason why I'm looking at it. I'm like, why did I put Quill Spike in? I'm playing Murderous Red Cap and the sack out. So it's pretty cool. I'm looking forward to actually drafting it now.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else you've been doing?
That's pretty much it. I've just been pretty consumed with finding my cards and getting as many of the foils. Like, I've already got probably, it's a standard size case, it's like 540, and I've already probably got 80 cards foiled in promo already, just from my collection.
Yeah, that's the beauty of working at a store. We get those nice little promos like that.
Yeah.
Where we can have those nice promos and stuff, so... what have I been up to? I've been playing Magic and working on my cube, but I've developed a new liking for a new game called Dice Masters. So I've been, along with playing two to three games of EDH a week. So I get all my EDH time in and with different people that I like playing with. And then I pretty much have spent the rest of the time playing board games. Legendary. I'm hooked on that DC deck builder that Brandon's been bringing to on Mondays. The villains is way better though. Like the heroes, this one just sucks. Like this last Monday we played, I got stuck with Superman, and he's completely
sort of underwhelming.
He's horrible.
I really like him, but it's really like I don't think he's won a game yet. I think he's won one game out of every game that we've played.
Everyone else must have been playing horribly then, because Superman sucks. So,
it takes going off with Superman to make him work, but
the villains is way more fun.
Yeah, I'll bring Crisis with next time.
Yeah,
it's one of the add-on packs. It makes it play a little bit more like Legendary.
Oh, okay.
Is there's a general thing that you have to beat. There's a situation. There's like a scheme going on, and the villains are harder.
Oh, that's cool.
So about magic,
but yeah. But yeah, so I think a lot of us, and even if Alex are here, we've been playing Magic, so we haven't stepped away from playing Commander, but a lot of us have been playing Commander alongside expanding into other interests. We've all been kind of expanding outward into other tabletop games along with Commander, so we've been playing our share of EDH, but then we're also playing other stuff that we've been getting into, so... But other than that, that's pretty much all I've been up to. Like I said, last week the week before was Mother's Day, so we didn't do a show that day. And then the next week we were going to do a show, but Alex was sick, and we had that thunderstorm. Yeah. Tornado warning and stuff, so that kind of took stuff. My the high school I graduated from, the football field, got completely destroyed by the tornado at Campbell. The uprights were got torn out. The uprights got torn off the goalposts. The scoreboard got ripped out of the ground. What else happened? The one field shed that has all the track and field stuff got completely destroyed. But yeah, that's about why we haven't been on lately. But other than that. For news this week, kind of old. A lot of people have heard a lot of this already. Dual decks, Zendikar versus Eldrazi. We're gonna have a dual deck. They haven't really announced what's gonna be in it.
No, they won't, because they're not gonna tell us anything until we get a lot closer. Because it'll just be like the Speed versus Cunning. It'll be like all of the past fall ones. One of the two cards will be a spoiler.
Yep.
Like it was Zergo last time.
Yep.
The time before that it was Plukrinos.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. So we'll figure out.
I liked Speed versus Cunning because we got a really, really cool version of an old card, that foil.
Arcanus.
The Arcanus. The foil Arcanus.
The Arcanus is really cool looking.
Yeah, it is.
I'm just not sure if it's going to be which one was going to get the foil, or is going to be the preview. If we're going to get one of the new Eldrazi leaders. Although it might be, because I mean...
I think we'll have an Eldrazi as a leader. Like, it would not surprise me.
Yeah, like the foil alternate art will be either one of the new Eldrazi, or it'll be the leader of the Zendikar army will be the one.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. I hope it's the Eldrazi.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Yeah, so we have that. The other thing is the August FNM promo. I think we're going to see a lot more Modern play in FNM now. Because they are really, really pushing for FNM to move away from Standard, from the looks of it. Because we've got, we have the Path to Exile coming out, and now we have Serum Visions.
It's just the whole Modern Masters thing, trying to get it away from Modern. I don't think it's necessarily a push to get it away from that. I think it's just the idea that since Modern Masters is the set that just came out, that they're both going to be Modern cards.
Yeah, because I have to say, the artwork on this card is amazing.
I mean, it's been a while, but there used to be a time when the card didn't have... Like, it was back in Innistrad block, one of the FNM... Like, during that time, one of the FNMs was Savage Land.
Yeah.
Like, that was...
Something random.
Yeah, it was something random. Like, it used to be, like, it was, like, Standard, Modern, Random.
Yeah.
Standard, Modern, Random, or something like that.
Yeah.
That's how it rotated. And then, a little bit ago, it just started being Standard cards the whole time.
Yeah. But that artwork looks pretty amazing. Like, that almost makes me want one for BenQ. Like, just because of the artwork. But Serum Visions really isn't as great as it seems, because, like, Preordained is just better.
Preordained and Ponder and Brainstorm are just better.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool, though. I like that whole artwork scheme. Kind of looks like an X-Men hero. It's kind of weird.
But yeah, so we have that. That's really all we had for notes or for news. There wasn't much anything else other than, hey, Modern Masters is out.
Although on Modern Masters, there was a, like, the store opened a little bit for the singles and stuff.
Yeah.
And all of the foils were dinged up. Like, their entire box, the foils all had a mark on them, and apparently it was from the packaging, like, straight out of the thing. Something happened to the foil sheet, and it's
when
not,
they pulled it out of the cardboard case?
No, I think it was from when it got put in or something. Oh. It was a production error. Because I've heard, like, it's not an isolated incident,
yeah,
but it's also not widespread.
Well, yeah, the machines they're using to package the Modern Masters has to be different than the way they were doing it. Because I don't know if you guys, listeners out there, have seen it yet, but these are cardboard packs that are actual solid cardboard packs that don't.
Mm-hmm.
They're I like the packaging. I hope they go to. I think for Magic, I think they should go to this style of packaging because it is really nice. You get a full booster pack, and like if you're leaving the store to go home, you can stick your pack right. You can stick your cards right back in that pack, and it's sturdy enough to hold the cards.
The only problem with that is like when I was opening on Friday, a guy came in and buy some packs or whatever.
Yeah.
He mentioned that apparently it's going around that it's not impossible to open that pack from the side or the top or the bottom.
Oh, I suppose.
And being able to tuck it back in and it looks sealed.
Yeah.
So that's going to be, I think, an issue if they go to this promo and kind of a wash out if you're buying on Modern Masters 2 packs on eBay.
Yeah.
Because they might have already checked and they might have taken the good card and the good foil and put back a crappy card and a crappy foil.
Yeah, they can be tampered with. They're not tamper proof.
Yeah, I don't think I didn't, like, obviously, I haven't looked into it and I haven't tried, but I've heard that it's not impossible.
Yeah. Well, eBay particularly because like you're just seeing a picture after you get the product.
Yeah.
I mean,
especially with a card pack like that.
Yeah, after you get the product, you can't just go back to the store and say, "Hey, you screwed me over," because it's on eBay.
And it'd be so hard to, and it would be impossible to tell. Like if the thing is in fact, you're just like, "Oh, I bought a pack and it was shitty luck."
Yep.
And that's what happens.
Yeah.
But if it's being tampered with, you're not going to be able to tell the difference.
Yeah, because all you see is a picture. Where at the store, you're going to be able to tell right away because it's going to be opened.
No, like not the pull tab part ripped open, tab on the top.
Oh.
Pulled out, open it from the top, and then put them back and put that tab back in so that pull tab is closed.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, it should be interesting how they deal with that situation. But either way, it's nice packaging.
It looks nice and and all that other stuff, but if they can't fix that issue, I don't know.
Yeah.
How I feel about it.
Yeah.
If it is even an actual issue. Although it was mentioned, or no, never mind. It wasn't mentioned.
I do want to say one thing about this set, though, because I have heard this, ever since I worked last Saturday. I've had two or three people, all EDH players specifically. Oh my god, I'm going to buy a Munchie so I can get a Tarmogoyf for EDH. Tarmogoyf is not good in EDH. People need to lose this idea that it's a good card in EDH because it really isn't.
Unless you're playing a green base or like a graveyard deck with green in it, so that he can be a 2-mana 5/6 or something like that.
Yeah.
Like other than that, you're not going to gain a lot of advantage by playing a 2-mana vanilla 3/4.
No.
That's really good when you're playing Legacy and Modern. Not that good when you're playing Commander.
One of my friends recently who bought a few booster boxes of the stuff opened a Tarmogoyf, and he was all excited about it, and I crushed his dreams by explaining to him that its power and toughness is only among the card types in your graveyard, and then I had to show him on the Gatherer because he did not believe me, and then after that his dreams were crushed.
What did you think it did?
He thought it was a Lurgoyf or a... He thought it was a Lurgoyf or a...
It isn't just your graveyard.
Yes.
It's card
but he was looking at Lurgoyf. He thought
it was like a Lord of Extinction.
Like a Lord of Extinction or something like that. And it's like, I'm like, yeah, it doesn't work like that. And I explained to him, and he wouldn't believe me. And I showed him on the Sword Gather, and he's like, well, at least I got good trade bait. It's like his dreams are completely crushed. It was just like,
Sorry, dude, but...
I love the story behind Tarmogoyf, because when they put him in... Like, originally, when Mauro designed Tarmogoyf,
yeah,
it was two colorless and a green for a star.
Yeah.
And that was what... It was the same, like, idea. Like, yeah. The rest of the Kartex was the same. But then they pulled that for a little bit to try... They were going to put the first Planeswalker in there.
Yeah.
It was going to be a Garruk Planeswalker card.
Yeah.
But they hadn't worked out all the kinks of Planeswalker cards yet.
Yeah.
So Garruk got pulled.
Yeah.
And they put Tarmogoyf back in. But they had either lost the file that was sent with or something, and the development team put it in as a 2-mana star plus 1, because
yeah,
all of the other Lurgoyfs had been star plus 1 for this
time. Yeah, well, yeah.
Which, if it was the original card, would not be the ridiculous, because 3-mana star is not nearly as good as it would have been.
Yeah.
And it was just it wasn't purposefully pushed in any way. It was an accident.
Yeah, and it was a junk card for the longest time, and then all of a sudden Modern became a thing, and
yeah.
Oh my God, it creeped up to the $100 mark, which is insane. So don't be just if you have any players out there that are all excited about Tarmogoyf, let them know that it's not every card in your graveyard, because. Yeah, my friend was completely dream crushed.
RTFC.
Yeah. RTFC, we all know what that stands for. So yeah, there's that. I didn't really do any Modern Masters things. Like, I guess I don't like the whole, like, I don't know. I guess I have my own personal thing. Magic has just gotten really expensive.
Yeah, it's way out of my price range
right now. Yeah, Magic is way out of my price range right now. I just can't afford it anymore, so I'm pretty much down to buying cards when sets come out after we open a case at the store.
Yeah,
I'll just buy the singles, because I'll save money that way.
Yeah. And I'm going to be watching spoilers for cube things and trying to get them as well. It's pretty much...
Yeah, and if I end up doing any pre-releases, it's going to be because somebody wants more cards, and I just want to play. That's going to be
like pre-releases I can see myself doing still.
Yeah.
I feel like that's... Especially, I think I might do... I'm definitely going to do the Origins pre-release, because I think that's going to be a really good time.
Yeah.
Because I think they're going to try really hard to make the event or whatever the side thing that's going on there a lot of fun.
Yeah. So, I don't know, I'll probably end up working it if I don't play it, so... But yeah, so we have that. Other than that, that's all we really have for news. And basically, that puts us right into our main topic, which is going to be led by Mr. Brandon today.
All right. It's an article by a guy named Abe Sargent. He's a writer for Star City. He does a lot of Commander-based articles, I believe.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff like that.
I've read his stuff before.
And this one's The Kitchen Table, number 371. It was one of his running series about casual magic. This one's called Commander Multiplayer Theory. And it's just about the ideas that you don't... Like, it takes the aspects of a magic game and just makes them into a multiplayer and gets you that kind of mindset.
Yeah.
Like, the first little heading he's got is, you can't win until you don't lose. And that just means, like... I don't know if I've accidentally built some of these, but a glass cannon EDH deck, not going to work.
Yeah, no.
Like, if you're all in all the time, you're going to lose most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Because anytime you're trying to balance a lot of stuff, and then it's just on one little thing, and that thing dies, your whole plan falls apart. And then you just spend the rest of the game spinning your wheels and wishing your creature hadn't died.
Man.
You're not going
to
have a good
time. I think a lot of people end up falling into that crack, because they're like, well, I want to play my deck this way, but I know someone else is going to be playing removal to stop the stuff that's going to hurt everyone in the game. Which, on a certain aspect, you can think that way, but like one of our old co-hosts, Corey, said, you should not be relying on other people at the table to get rid of your threats that bug you. You should be worrying about that yourself.
Well, because if the person who can get rid of it is smart, they're going to let that happen until it happens to them.
Yeah.
They have no reason to stop it until it affects them.
Yeah.
I've done that all the time. Where I forgot, like, it was like the one game where you had the bounce spell on the table for the big, for like 42-42 Mimeoplasm or whatever, and it's like, I don't care until it swings at me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, she can run you guys all out of the game.
That's pretty much how I was playing it, because I remember that game because what was it? Every turn, the person playing that would look at me and go, "Are you going to bounce it?" I'm like, "You're not affecting me. Like, you can hit whoever you want."
I've done that a lot. Yeah, I'm looking at a shorts to plowshares, and someone's got an Avacyn in play, and I'll just wait. And then
yeah.
I don't care until it attacks me.
Yeah.
Like, you leave me alone, we haven't got problems.
Yeah.
Oh, it's really funny to watch them go Avacyn Armageddon and then exile Avacyn.
You lose your stuff too, yeah.
I know somebody who does that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Except they do Avacyn World.
World Slayer?
World Slayer, yeah.
Yeah. I think World Slayer is just one of those cards that ticks everyone off at the table.
So just out of curiosity, if they manage to get World Slayer off, and you can you exile her before the trigger?
Yeah, in response to the World Slayer trigger, you can exile
yes.
Avacyn.
That would be hilarious.
Yes. I think that would make the person scoop.
Yeah, yes, he most certainly would.
I mean, it just resets the game at that point. Just nobody has anything anymore.
Yeah.
Except for he has a World Slayer.
Yeah. But, you know, I think World Slayer is one of those cards that it's one of those really cheap magic cards. It's like a dollar rare that everybody hates just because of what it does. I guess every game I've been in where I've taken on a World Slayer, it's really never... It's spent more time kicking everybody off than actually winning a game.
Yeah.
Like, everyone just gets mad.
Oh, because the whole idea is, like, how do you win from past the World Slayer? Like, if... Like, people who play World Slayer, like, you need Avacyn or Boros Charm that turn.
No. You can do it with,
You can do it with Thrun. Thrun can do it, too. Thrun survives. He can regenerate himself out of it.
Oh, that doesn't say can't be regenerated? The World Slayer lets you regenerate through it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Thrun can regenerate through it. I used to play a Thrun EDH deck, and I had World Slayer in there for that purpose. Because, yeah, when Thrun regenerates, he's not going to have it equipped back to him. But
yeah, he will.
He's the only creature... Oh, does it?
He won't unequip the World Slayer.
No, because he never leaves the battlefield.
Oh.
Technically.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so, like, he regenerates out of it, and I'm the only one left on the board with Thrun and a sword. It's just like, all right, then this game's over, because Thrun is just going to hit everybody, and every time he hits, he's going to wipe the board.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Soul of Inferexia would actually be really good because he has trample.
Yeah.
So he's going to do combat damage.
Five to the 5/5 trample. And he's like, oh, yeah, I'm a stuff Indo.
Yeah. Because you can flutter your mana in response to attacking and activate it. Yeah, that's kind of cool. But like I said, it's just I've seen that card make more people mad than actually end any game. It'll end games, but then that person that played that usually ends up with nobody to play EDH with in another game because they just walk away. It's like, bam! I win with World Slayer. Hey, you guys want to start another game? And the other three players are like, yeah, we're gonna go. No,
nah,
no, not with you. So,
or they'll be like, oh, you want to play like that? And they'll play like their aggro deck and just punish this guy.
Yep.
And make sure he.
They'll play their aggro deck and punish you, or they'll play the or in other people's cases, like in mine. I would play my mono blue deck and just completely wreck that person. Or just the decks that aren't nice come out, let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
So
that's
just
more how I would play. I just make them pay for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But so. Like, he goes on to talk about like you don't have to play a lot of stuff. Like just having a few defenses. And he mentions things like Indomitable Ancients, like the 4-drop 2/10.
Yeah.
Or Darksteel Mirror. That every deck can play.
Yeah.
Guard Goma Zoa is another good one. The Fog Bank.
Yeah, there's lots of cheap cards
you
can
just
play.
Like, just like some random stuff to help you survive long enough for your stuff to do things.
I like Darksteel Mirror. That card's fun. Like, I've thought about adding, like, when I was working on my cube, I'm still kind of working on it, I'm actually considering throwing that in there because the idea of Ensoul Artifact in him just sounds really interesting to me.
I mean, it seems good. Or that in Darksteel
Citadel.
Like, you can do that standard right now.
I like that for some reason. I like Ensoul Artifact.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
I've seen a guy build a deck kind of like around that. His whole deck was more like artifact based in general. It had that super big indestructible 10/10 defender guy.
Yeah.
And he was running a playset of Eugene's.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had Ensoul Artifact, Darksteel Citadels, Shrapnel Blast.
Shrapnel Blast. Just
Scuttling Dimension.
Oh, God. Scuttling. Sacrificing a Scuttling Doom Engine to a Shrapnel Blast seems dirty.
Oh, there's 10 damage that I didn't even do so for combat.
That's 11. It's 5.
Yeah. When they attack you, you can't be blocked by, I think, was it power 2 or less? Like, it can't be chumped?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it can't be chumped, so you had to either lose something valuable or take 6. And then after you've taken 6, I'm going to throw another 11 at you. So that's 17.
Yeah, so you're 3. Have a nice day.
And
then
I'm
going to
lightning strike you. Next game. GG.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Scuttling Doom Engine is one of those cards in M15, though. They're like, funny you mentioned Scuttling Doom Engine. I think Scuttling Doom Engine is one of those cards from M15 that really added a lot to EDH.
Oh, yeah. I think that card's so underrated.
The card is so good. Like, just having a 6-6 that can hit, but then when it dies, it also hits. It's like, oh my god.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know it's stupid in the Duretti deck.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you're playing one of the Duretti
If you're playing Duretti, it's stupid.
Where you just keep getting him back and then just keep shooting.
Alex made a Duretti deck, and Alex's Duretti deck is just brutal. It's just mean.
I don't like his Duretti deck at all.
Yeah, Alex's Duretti deck? Oh, that deck's mean.
What's his other one that he does that, the guy that makes a copy of...
Oh, Felden?
Yeah.
Felden would be a good one for that
deck. That deck is...
Because you sacrificed it at end of turn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he has that. Alex has the Duretti. I think his Felden and Duretti deck work on the same aspect. He has Duretti in his Felden deck.
Mm-hmm.
So he'll play. He plays, but he Alex does it even better. He plays Felden and Kiki Jiki. And then just makes double copies of stuff.
Felden this into play, Kiki Jiki another one.
Yeah. Just stupid.
Gross.
He just crushes it, yeah.
Well, it's really funny, though, to watch Alex play that deck, because he'll sit and he'll dirtle for a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And then all of a sudden, he just does, like, a whole bunch of crap all at once. It's like, what are you doing? How did you get that into a graveyard, for one? And for, I don't know.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
His deck seems harmless until he decides to do something with it, and then everybody dies.
Because usually he'll hold it. Usually it's a mono-red deck, and for some reason, Alex is this mono-red deck Alex has. It will protect itself like a white deck, and it's red. And then when he's ready, he comes off of protection and just blows everything up and you lose.
Well, he told you about the time that he reverberated Exsanguinate for 30.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just ridiculous.
Yeah, that was a fun day.
Yeah. But yeah.
The next section he goes on to talk about is always counter cards. And that one's, the interesting thing about multiplayer is you are always at card disadvantage.
Yeah.
Like there's almost no way to overcome it, because for every one card you draw, your opponents draw 3 or 4, 2 or 3, however many opponents you have.
Yeah.
Because the people you are trying to beat will always be drawing more cards than you.
Yeah, because you're taking, 4 people, 3 other people, yeah.
Yeah, in a 4-person game, the 3 people are... Your 3 cards to every card you draw get drawn.
Yeah.
So it's one of those... And he talks about... He mentions in here how Dismiss, he views as it's the 2-colorless, blue-blue, counter-target spell draw card.
Yeah.
It's better than counter-spell.
Yeah.
Because Dismiss replaces itself.
By personal preference, I never play counter-spell in EDH.
Yeah.
I will not play counter-spell in EDH because I look at EDH as a format where... 1 and 2 drops are underpowered in EDH anyway, where I can play counterspells 3, 4, and 5, counterspells at 3, 4, or 5 drops, and get crazy more value out of them. Like my blue deck, like my one blue deck I have, I'm playing 3 and 4 drop counterspells just because I get to draw cards, or I get to completely counter something and exile that spell completely.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is way more powerful than paying 2 mana for a counterspell. Like, when I'm at the store and someone's building a blue deck, and the first card I always see when they have a blue EDH deck is Counterspell, and I'm like, take that crap out of there.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a Counterspell. You could be playing Fairy Trickery. You could be playing, what is it, the other one, the other 3-drop that just exiles.
Dissipate.
Dissolve. There's so many better counterspell options out there once you get it. There's the 4-drop counter target spell and tap 4 land.
Oh yeah, Rewind is such
Rewind.
A good
I mean,
it really is. Especially in a blue deck that plays a bunch of instants.
Yeah.
Yeah, like why would you limit yourself to counterspell and nothing?
Rewind. Jason's ingenuity.
Yeah. Or my personal favorite, and it's an oldie goldie of mine, what is it, one blue, one colorless, counter target spell, your opponent draws two cards, and then you go draw a card at the beginning of the next turn's upkeep. Love that card. Can't remember the name of it off the top of my head.
Is it a common?
Yeah, it's just a common. It wasn't Alliances.
Oh,
yeah, it's old. But no, I love that card. It's just, it's a great card. It's I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head. I don't know if it starts with an A. But it's just solid because, yeah, I'm giving my opponent two cards, but I still get to draw a card out of it. And I still live by Nick Randall, one of our other hosts that used to be on the show. Yeah, let your opponents draw cards. You just have to do it better.
Mm-hmm.
And what you should be doing when you're playing EDH anyway.
Or if at all possible, you control their draws.
Yeah.
Scryther.
Yeah. So.
Which, of course, in blue, there are cards that do that.
Yeah.
Do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So typically, any spell that, even if you have to pay extra mana for it, that tacks on draw a card, probably worth the extra mana.
Just
to keep up with your opponents.
And we have discussed this on the show before. Every color, no matter what you're playing, has some form of draw.
Yes.
And if you're playing colors where those are harder to find, you can always play the colorless artifacts that let you draw cards.
Mm-hmm.
Like Nin
exactly
the Paint.
They're not exactly the efficient, but
yeah, they're not efficient. Staff of Nin. That works in every deck.
Oh, I love Staff of Wind.
Staff of Wind.
Another good one, and I love it, and I want to use it. I've never gotten a chance to.
What?
But it's the one of the towers. It's 8 mana, tap it, draw 4 cards.
Nice.
Just repetitive.
Yeah, the tower, yeah, that one. It's pretty sweet.
But the next heading is Too Many Bombs, Bust a Bunker. And that one is sort of similar to the first one, in the whole glass game. Like, he goes on and he talks about, so let's say it's a Glitter the Trader deck, and you just have Grave Pact, Pernicious Deed, Damnation, Avatar Wall, Woodfall Primus, Oblivion Stone, Solemns, and stuff like
that.
You're
not going to stop all of them.
Yeah, no, it's, and then he's like, why do you always lose? Because everyone knows that's what your deck is.
Yeah.
So they kill you.
Yeah.
Like, if everything you play is a threat, and people are going to remember that every time you tap mana, it's something that needs to be answered.
Yeah.
And then that's just going to cause your...
And we have players at the store that are like that. They play so much good stuff that they can't do anything because the whole game you're watching them and killing them.
Yeah, that's kind of turning into my male dragons right now. Like, automatically, male, already, that's what she does. She just brings big things out, and adding a tribal aspect to it just makes her worse.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much where I sit with my graveyard deck. Everyone's played against my graveyard deck, and they know what it does. So now it's like, oh, he's going for Terastodon. Oh, he's going for Woodfall Prime.
Any decent Caridor deck is a threat.
Yeah.
Just like any decent Captain Sisse or Kalia deck is a threat.
But I've started. I still like playing the deck, regardless of that I know I'm a huge target. But to me, I know that's going to happen, so I just prepare for it and just deal with it. Well, if I lose, I lose. I mean, it's just EDH. We're not playing a tournament. We're not walking away with booster packs at the end of an EDH or EDH meeting. It's just playing for fun, so. My decks are pretty laid back.
Yeah. So the next thing he talks about, it says, the tail is what warns people away. And that one, he starts off just comparing Seal of Fire to Shock.
Yeah.
And how Seal of Fire is better in a multiplayer format like this than Shock. Like, yeah, they're still going to do the same thing. They're going to kill something that's an X2.
Yeah,
but when you have Steel of Fire on the table, the person with the X2 is not going to attack you.
It is a threat. It is pre-warning. Mess with me, your stuff. You force the player to play around it.
Yes. And it's just the idea. If you can, anytime you can control your opponents with stuff like that,
yeah,
it's just going to help you stay in the game longer.
On top of that seal, besides the red one that's really good, you have the white one.
That exiles.
You've got the green one that destroys an artifact or an enchantment.
Yeah.
I mean, all those seals are really good in one way or another.
Yeah, it's like a... What is it? It's a Doomblade, Naturalize, a Shock.
Yep.
Like a Path.
Yep.
Sort of.
And then you also have the artifact, well, the black and white artifact,
Yep.
Black and white artifact from the Alara block, Shards of Alara, that is the black capsule and the white capsule.
Mm-hmm.
Because the white capsule does the same thing as the green one, and the black capsule is a Doomblade.
Yes.
So those are good, too.
Yeah, just stuff that sit around and just are
yeah.
annoying.
And I've seen the black capsule do stupid stuff, because he was on our last episode, our friend Joe Tuttle. He plays a Mishra EDH deck, which drives absolutely everybody insane because it shouldn't work, but it does. And that deck uses Executioner's Capsule because he gets to bring artifacts back from his graveyard.
Yeah.
So I kill your creature and sack this, but then I'm gonna bring it right back to play back to the field. So it's even scarier.
Yeah. He talks like he comes up with a scenario like it goes off of the whole your opponents have more card advantage than you. It's just like if you have the Seal of Doom, which is the black seal, and your opponent has what does he have in the article? Talks about some kind of one of the angels. They got a big angel in play.
Yeah.
He chooses not to attack you, but chooses to attack player B. And then player B casts the kill spell on the angel.
Yeah.
Now, you have done nothing but have this card in play, but you've dealt with two cards. So you're up two cards now, because each one of your opponents has used a card.
Yeah.
And you haven't used anything.
Yeah.
Because now that kill spell can't go to one of your things later.
You're just hosed. You're just hosed. Have a nice day.
And the next section is card in the hand is worth two on the table.
Oh.
And it's one of those things where it's like he says he sees new players having a lot of problems just staring at the board, and it's like, oh, that's going to be a problem, that's going to be a problem. But not paying attention to the hidden information. Like, how many cards does he still have in his hand? How much could he be doing? Or things in the graveyard. That one gets missed a lot.
Yeah.
In what, like, people don't remember to track what has died.
Yeah.
And stuff like that, especially when with stuff like Rise of the Dark Realms that floats around. You need to know what is also dying.
Well, that card's mean. Like,
one of my friends from Wilmer, he did that. He Rise from the Dark Realms, and this is actually on point, too. He didn't remember that there was a containment priest in someone else's graveyard.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Once the things came in, he got a bunch of triggers, and then everything left.
Oh, no. That hurts. No, I like Rise of the Dark Realms and Living Death. My graveyard deck, and I don't know who's played. I know Alex has played against this and seen it. I played a game with my Cardor graveyard deck where I got to effectively bounce or... I got to play and retrieve from my graveyard like three times each, Rise of the Dark Realms and Living Death.
Ew.
I ended up winning that game, but it was stupid. I played it, and then I would play it, and then I'd always have the one other one in my hand, and then I'd kill the board out. My board would get killed out the way I was playing it, and then the Eternal Witness, of course, would go to the graveyard with that,
mm-hmm.
and then I would play the other one. And then all that would come back into play, and then I'd just get the other one back. It was just swapping the two over and over again. It was a lot of fun. That was a fun game.
Yeah, and he goes on to point out stuff like when there's something like a Pernicious Deed or a Disc or a Perilous Vault, something of that nature in play, you can just safely assume everything in play is dead.
Yeah.
Treat it like it's in your graveyard already, and just attack that person who has it.
Just use your stuff.
Like, you get a disc
out,
I'm going to attack you until you pop the disc, and I can start playing stuff.
You're basically forcing them to use it.
Yeah, with stuff like
that. Everyone knows those late games suck. Those just late game are horrible.
Which actually sort of counteracts his point with the Seal of Doom.
Yeah.
Stuff earlier. Just like, I was like, you should play because it'll get people to stop attacking you. But if you see it on someone else's field, just whatever.
Force them to use the crap.
Yeah. Because, I mean, if you let that sit there as a deterrent, then it's just going to deter you the whole time. So you might as well just, like, with stuff like that, don't avoid it. Because that's what I do. It's just like, well, it's going to happen. Whatever. I'm going to hit you.
Yeah.
Pop your thing. I guess I don't care.
Yeah. And here's another thing. It's not necessarily something, but
If you're ever playing against Black White and you know someone's playing Merciless Eviction, as soon as it hits the graveyard, exile that graveyard immediately. Because I have yet to play a game of EDH where Merciless Eviction gets played, it goes to the graveyard, and every other player at the field that didn't like it going off, well, at least it went off, it's going to be in the graveyard. I'm like, no, exile the graveyard now. Just no. Because somehow that person always gets the card back, and then they just use the stupid thing again. And Merciless Eviction is one of those cards that it comes out of nowhere. Merciless Eviction is one of those cards that just literally comes out of nowhere. You're just like, oh, this game's going just great. And then it's like, Merciless Eviction. Well, damn. So, be ready for that card. That and Terminus. Get rid of that crap, too.
Terminus is funny, though.
I love Terminus.
Terminus is mean.
But I will say that Cyclonic Rift is better.
Cyclonic Rift is absolutely amazing.
It's so fun, especially when you can continuously use it. Like, on Thursday, the last game I played, I was playing my Daxos deck, which I don't even think you've seen yet, but I hit the guy who was playing the Artifact deck, exiled the top card, it was Cyclonic Rift.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, okay, I'm a Cyclonic Rift. Three turns later, I drew my own. And at this point, he had managed to somehow go off with his artifact deck.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, I'm going to do this. Oh, all my artifacts are indestructible. Everybody's the artifacts now. I'm going to make you stack your land. And I'm like, well, in response, let's bring everything back to your hand.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to kill you with my 14-14 Daxos that you left alive.
Nice. Okay. You playing Steal the Godhead in that deck?
No.
Oh, you should.
At this point, it's literally just a bunch of spare parts.
Uh-huh.
Like, it's just a bunch of blue and white cards that are good cards in general.
Well, that's all that.
It's not necessarily like a Daxos themed deck where I have like all the stuff that makes them unblockable and hexproof and stuff like that. It's just a green and white deck, or a blue and white deck that just does stuff.
Yeah.
I modeled it after my Tajik deck.
Yeah, that Tajik deck. Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, that's the end of the article.
Yeah.
He goes into a lot more detail than
what
I pointed out, obviously, so it is a good read.
It's really good.
It's one that I pulled up for this because I've had it bookmarked for about a year and a half.
Yeah.
I like the article and I have it saved, and sometimes I just go back and look at it every once in a while.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, I can share it with everybody. And then I did.
Yeah.
it's just a really good article.
I like it. Speaking of which, I do have another announcement. You're going to see in the next few weeks, as we cover stuff, main topics, we're going to be going off of articles, because there's a lot of good ones out there. And we have recently brought on a staff member that you guys have heard once, me and Brandon's boss, chatting. He's not going to be on the show, but he is now considered part of the staff. He is now finding articles and ideas for us to talk about. So, because, like, chatting when he's at work, like, he has all this free time to surf the web and read articles on Magic, like, all the time. So, he's offered his services and just snapping up articles to talk about and everything. And then every once in a while we have something interesting we talk about. So, but yeah, I like the articles. I think it doesn't matter what game you're doing. I think it's really, really important if you're getting into any game, period, you should be reading articles. I've recently experienced this getting into Dice Masters. I've been reading a lot of Dice Masters articles just to learn how to stuff.
There's a Dice Masters podcast.
Dice Masters podcast. I've started listening to them, too. We're going to shout them out in the zero because they're pretty amazing. No, I've been reading articles on Dice Masters and watching Pro Tour play, which is really weird for me to do because I don't understand. I don't like watching Pro Tour play usually. But I figured it's the easiest way to learn. But yeah, if you want more knowledge in any game, especially Magic, Magic is a huge one. You should be reading articles. There is a lot of good people out there. Abe Sargent is really good. There's a bunch of people out there that just do excellent articles.
Oh, yeah. Tons of different places. Dark City's got good articles.
I like Gathering Magic. I like Gathering Magic. Gathering Magic is one I follow.
Tapped Out. They have some.
Tapped Out. Quiet Speculation.
Yep.
Uh,
say TCG players got their own writers and stuff to do articles.
Yeah, and that goes for our listeners, too. If you guys have any articles that you found that you find interesting, you can send them our way, and we'll look at them and cover them if you want us to. So, if you want us to go through and talk about them, so. But, yeah, that's kind of our main topic tonight. Metagame. I have observed some metagame stuff in EDH, believe it or not. For a while, it was nothing but Dragon Decks everywhere. Everybody's playing Dragon Decks because of the new set. I was actually surprised. The whole Dragon thing, I thought it would last longer. It's actually starting to die down. Like, it was a cute little fad for, like, the first 3 weeks after the set came out. But I think now it's kind of dying down. You still have people playing Dragon Decks, but they're not as prevalent. Like, the last few times I've been seen playing, I've seen people going back to playing, you know, stuff they just like to play in general.
Well, I think it's just the whole, a new set came out with a whole bunch of new legends.
Yeah.
And then it's going to, I bet we'll see a very similar wave in Origins. When
yeah.
You get the five Planeswalkers that can
you will.
We're
like,
going to see a lot of Jace, Gideon, Liliana.
There's a good chance I'm probably going to build a deck list online with one of those guys and building it.
Yeah. Like,
because I like the idea of having a general that flips into a Planeswalker.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's cool. I think it's an interesting twist.
Mm-hmm.
So, I wonder if we're going to have checklist cards for those.
We will.
Yeah.
There's no way they won't.
Yeah. I just hope they don't make them, like, make them really hard to get.
They're going to be harder to get than they were.
Well, I would hope that...
they're not going to be as abundant.
Yeah, there's five cards that are going to be duplicated.
I know. I would hope that if WotC is playing their cards right, they include the checklist in a pack that's going to have a Planeswalker.
I don't think they... Maybe. I don't know if they have enough control over it, though.
I would hope that they would actually think through that. Because ideally, when this set comes out and you draft it, and you don't get the checklist card...
So that's the thing. On that same... If they were able to do that, I think you would get your emblem every time.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
Like, I don't think
but
they
at the
have
same
that,
time...
Yeah.
It's a lot more likely that you're going to flip your Planeswalker than you are to ult one.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
I think the emblem is just a cute thing to have, where if you're playing in draft, if you're drafting this set, I want a checklist card, because depending on the situation, if there's some players that don't use sleeves when they're playing idiot drafting, and those people make me cringe, but, those people that don't use sleeves when they draft, I don't think they're going to want to be showing everyone, hey, I drafted a Planeswalker card. You know what I mean?
Or let alone, hey, this is my next card.
Or, hey, this is my next card. I think they're going to have to combat something. Or at worst, at least maybe for the stores that are doing pre-releases, give a set of checklist cards out for that store. Something.
As far as that goes, if you have it, and I know this is just me personally, but especially it's just like a draft or something like that, if you go over to our big box of basic land and you take a marker and you just write Liliana on it,
yeah.
And then you cast it and then you grab the one from over there, I don't have a freaking problem with that.
Yeah.
You don't need the checklist card.
Yeah.
As long as you...
Because, I mean, I know with, what was it, Innistrad and...
Like, as long as we look through your deck and there's only one basic land that said Liliana on it.
Yeah. Because I know for a fact we had, with Dark Ascension and Innistrad, we had that too, where, you know, you got, like, just through checklist cards in every set. Like, almost every pack had a checklist card in it.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, they just took the advertising card away and just threw a checklist card in there.
I still to this day have a stack of votes this big of just the checklist cards.
Oh, yeah, like, I don't know, it's like this,
yeah.
Like, literally. Just,
yeah, the store has a bunch of them.
Yeah.
They're weirdly going up in value, too, it's weird.
That's funny.
Like, as far as tokens go, they're still not worth a whole lot.
Yeah.
But they're still going up in value, because people especially...
Well, people
ones, because people like to get their Delvers, like, super... I've seen a lot of checklist cards that are altered, and there's, like, a big full art picture on everything but the, like, Delver of Secrets.
Oh,
so
wow.
So they use the rest of the card as art, and then they just, like, just so you show that's the unchecked one. Like, everything else is covered, and, like, this is my...
I find that funny. Card. Like, I've come to see people alt art the craziest cards. Like, but there's people that... If you're a good artist out there... You can make money on alt art cards.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
But
yeah, that's what I'm gonna end up doing with a lot of my like some of the cubes cards.
Oh yeah. Now that I'm down to my final five EDH decks, I plan on going to MTG Altered and getting all my tokens I'm using completely pimped out.
Oh yeah, getting tokens would be cool too.
Yeah, getting foil tokens like my zombie token. So but yeah, as far as the metagame is, I've seen a lot of people switching to decks that they just like to play. The last few days, which is the format should be, and I've seen the EDH format going back to that, where people are starting to move away from that fatted dragon deck and going back to, hey, I want to build this and play it. Hey, I want to build this and play it. So I've been seeing a lot of that, and I'm glad we're seeing that. And that we're seeing pet cards. I know I myself play a lot of pet cards. Like I play a Fallen Empires card that's pay two, sack a creature, reanimate a creature. If it was a Thrall, it gets a 2/2 counter.
We featured
that one. I play it because, to me, it's just a really cool old card.
Mm-hmm.
That's, like, the only reason why it's in there. And I know when I last played that deck, I had someone ask me that, like, well, why is that card in there? Because I like it. Like, that's the only purpose it has.
It does synergize
with my deck, but there's a lot better options than that card.
Isn't your deck Edric?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he makes Thralls. So he does make Thralls. You sacrifice, or you exile a Thrall he makes, and then keeps him alive. Like, it has a lot of synergy in that.
Yeah. But, I mean, it does synergize, but I do know there's better stuff out there than the cute little 2/2 counter. But I've been playing cards, I think. I just like playing. Like, I have Ouzliette in my deck. Just because.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it's an Ouzliette, why not? Mm-hmm. And Ouzliette is a pretty sweet card. I love the artwork on it and stuff. It's a card from, Arabian Nights.
Mm-hmm.
So the metagame is pretty interesting. On to Super Secret Tech. We have two cards, and I happen to find these cards going through building my cube. Our first one to feature here is an actual Future Sight card. It is Nakata War Pride. It is a 3-colorless, 3-green mana, so the mana cost is a little eh. But it has the cool future sight border, which I love.
Can't wait till we get, like, this is going to be an interesting card if we ever get it.
Yeah.
Like, when we go to the, like, Nakata home plane.
Yeah. Target creature is the Cat Warrior. Nakata War Pride must be blocked by exactly one creature of Fable. Whenever Nakata War Pride attacks, put X tokens as copies of Nakata War Pride into the battlefield, tapped and attacking, where X is the number of creatures defending player controls. Exile the tokens at the beginning of your next end step. The reason why I consider this really good tech, it's a cheap, really, really cheap card, and it's only uncommon, but just think of facing down that token deck where that person has 30 or 40 tokens in play and just swinging.
I have what would be even more fun is if you play that in something like a Sorak deck, and what's that? Is it Arkham Refuge? Where you pay a green and a blue, and you can play non-land cards as well. They have flash.
Alchemist Refuge.
Oh. And then you flash in like a Overwhelming Stampede or something like that after your tokens have been made, and then just Ruxface.
Oh.
Yep.
That's mean. Or even Dragon Throne of Tarkir. I like Dragon Throne of Tarkir. That's another one. That should be considered super secret tech. Because if you're ever that blue player or that red player is like, God, I wish I could play something in my deck that's like Overrun, but there's nothing in those colors that have that. Hey, Dragon Throne of Tarkir is your answer.
Or that Altar of the Broodmother or whatever, the one where every time you get a permanent they have to mill a card.
Altar of the Brood.
Yeah, Altar of the Brood. Oh, God. I play that in Endric and everybody, I get killed as... When I play my Endric deck, if I go turn one Altar Brood, and then they see I have Endric, I just get killed immediately because everybody hates that.
Yeah, it's annoying.
So.
When you posted this card, I looked it up, and I was looking at it, and I was looking at some of the rulings, and it says... There's one really interesting one, is that once the trigger's on the stack, if Nakata Warcry becomes something else, all of the tokens that come into play will be the new Nakata Warcry.
Oh my God.
So, and then I looked into it a little further, there's...
What cards do that?
There's
two. They're both from, I think they're both from the Ravnica block.
Mm-hmm.
At instant speed anyway. One of them, no, I don't think so. Hold on, give me just a second. Cyto shape. It's one colorless, a blue and a green. Choose a non-legendary creature on the battlefield. Target creature becomes a copy of that creature until end of turn.
Oh my god.
And then there's Mirror Weave from Shadow Umor, which is two colorless, and then a hybrid blue-white, and then another hybrid blue-white. Each other creature becomes a copy of target non-legendary creature of every until end of turn. That one will turn everything in play into the same creature.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter if the creature you're targeting has an Enter the Battlefield ability, because
yeah.
then you get to do a stupid thing.
Yeah.
Some notable ones we talked about before.
A Lockerworm.
Yeah.
Yes!
Yes, because they do get sacrificed to end of turn, so you will also draw a lot of cards.
Oh my god.
They get exiled.
Oh, they get exiled?
They get exiled.
So you don't get to draw cards.
So you gotta have stack-ups. Like, that's where I like the Coddle Pride. For my cube I designed is Archetype, but I'm building an Archetype type of cube off of Vintage type of format with Silver Black. But I made it so the cards are multitasked. They work with every strategy. It's not just works in one strategy. And just imagine making that many tokens and then just do an Altar of Dementia. Having just some stupid sack out, because the exile at the end of your turn. So before the end of your turn, you can just go, I'm going to hit this guy for, like, you're dead, and I'm going to alter dementia.
Without trample, you can't kill them.
Yeah.
Well, unless they have a bunch of tax creatures. Like, if they attacked last turn and you attacked, with
yeah.
you, like, against them, but...
Well, yeah, it's just swinging with a lot of creatures. Huh?
Sleep attack.
Yeah.
I mean, you can make. I might make.
I think this card.
Shape that
too. Or the things that you copy are all frost types.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be so mean.
Oh yeah. Another.
Everything.
Another annoying one would be. What's it go?
The White Titan. The White Titan.
Oh.
Acidic Slime would be really annoying.
It could be the White Titan too.
The White Titan get a lot of triggers out of that. What's it called?
Terrasse,
yeah, T-Don, or, what's the one with Persist? Woodfall Primus.
Woodfall
Primus.
Oh, my God.
What the heck? It's a
Woodfall Primus. Woodfall Primus is even worse. Oh, yeah, Woodfall Primus is gross. Because I don't know how that trigger worked, though. If you're copying Woodfall Primus and it has Persist, if you have
the tokens would disappear.
Yeah.
Tokens can have Persist, but it will do nothing.
Yeah.
Because as soon as they hit the graveyard... As soon as state-based actions are checked, then the token will disappear.
Yeah. Still, that's ridiculous. There's so many stupid the more we talk about this card, I'm thinking this needs to be in Bant. Like, it needs to be a Bant card.
Yeah, it's looking that way.
Because every interaction seems to be Bant. Just,
it could be Temur.
Or it could be Temur. Yeah, Temur,
yeah,
yeah.
You put it in Temur, you can get Warstorm Surge.
Banter Rug.
You can get Warstorm Surge on the table and then attack.
Oh, wow. I think people die.
Someone dying.
Someone is all dying.
Levels, yeah.
He's like, well, I'm going to attack the guy with the most tokens, and then I'm going to target all of my Warstorm Surge at the guy over there, and then kill the guy.
Oh, yeah. I have Warstorm Surge on. Who played World Slayer last game? I think you're dead. That's funny. Yeah, I found this card, and I think it's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Or,
like, we've found lots of interactions for it.
Well, another one will be Timur Ascendancy, so if you manage to copy something that's 4 or greater, every time it enters the battlefield, it's a draw card.
Oh. You want to refill your hand? That's cool. Yeah, it's just, this card's ridiculous. It's so many ways of being broken. This one, this one I'm having a hard time finding. It is only $1 uncommon, but it can only be found in Legends.
Yeah.
Okay, and the wording, the name of this card is really weird, so if I pronounce it wrong, it's just going to print. Ichneumon Druid. It's a one colorless, two green mana, human druid. Whenever an opponent casts an instant spell other than the first instant spell, that player cast each turn, Ichneumon Druid deals 4 damage to him or her. Mm-hmm. So if you're playing a blue deck where you want to, like, if you're playing mono blue or mono black or any of those, you know, cute little, I'm going to answer your stuff during your turn, sure, you're going to get that first counter spell in that turn, But go ahead and play more counter spells because you're going to take 4 damage for every spell you play after that. I like this card, and I think it fits in with any green deck that has a hard time against problem answer answer colors. Because, yes, it works within the theory of what you were talking about. Ichiban Druid doesn't seem like a lot, but it's forcing that control deck to play around that card.
Yeah.
Because now they just can't go, I'm going to counter your spell. Well, I'm going to counter your spell. Oh, I'm going to play another counter spell. You can take 4. So
it's also just a 3-mana 1/1. It's probably going to die to a lot.
Yeah,
like,
there's ways of protecting it, though.
Like if that's the game we're playing and I'm playing black, then I'll just target my first kill spell at that.
Yeah.
And then do the thing I wanted to do.
Yeah, but I would hope that whoever's playing this card would have ways to protect it.
Yeah, like and if you have aestheticism in play, well, you have this dude that's really annoying.
I mean, it's
Hexproof, and I have a regeneration shield on it. I don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, and I guess for me, whenever we go through these super secret texts, when I find cards in Legends and Antiquities and all this, I love finding those because these are things that when you're playing EDH, if you were to get these things and play them, yeah, they seem like really easy to answer. But when they come out of left field and your opponents aren't ready for them. It is completely awesome to watch your opponents interact with it. You're like, yeah, I'm going to play this. And they're like, because most of the time you're playing EDH, they're like, I'm going to play Bloodbraid Elf. Like, yeah, we know what it does. I'm going to play this. Yeah, we know what it does. And you're like, I'm going to play Ichiban Druid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, wait a minute, what's that?
Mm-hmm.
Then the blue player is like, damn it.
Mm-hmm. One of my mono green deck has a card from Homelands in it.
Yeah.
Which everyone always hates on. It's like, Homelands. But it's the one where each player takes, on their upkeep, will take 1 damage for each non-basic land they control. It's like a little 4-mana enchantment. And I've watched people just die to that card.
Non-basic lands are very, very common in EDH. And actually, there are certain players I know of that when you start hating out on non-basic land, they just get enraged that I've heard people complain like, oh yeah, people who go after non-basic lands are just, that's just the chumpy cheap way of playing. It's like, no, it's a smart way of playing.
Oh yeah, I've had to control myself and not make a mono red deck that plays Price of Progress and Runation.
Yeah.
It's just like, I'm not going to have a non-basic land.
Yeah, my red deck.
Everyone, count your lands. You 5-color deck over there, count all of your lands.
Do a Zozu deck. Just do like all the land hate. And just like, just punish people.
My Zozu deck plays off that. I play when, if someone plays a taps a mana during somebody else's turn, they sacrifice that land. And that hits every land. I play Blood Moon and Mages of the Moon.
Yeah, I wanted to play Blood Moon too. I guess I want to be the guy who's just like, well, no one's having fun. Like, I'm not even having fun doing this to you, but I mean, I'm doing it.
I mean, I play that, but the thing is, and people who have played against my Zozu deck know this, I'm not playing those cards to tick anybody off.
Yeah.
I'm solely playing Zozu because I'm going for the chaos factor, and the chaos factor on Zozu is amazing.
Yeah. It's just really hard to justify.
Zozu wrecks games.
Yeah. It's really hard to play Runation, though, when you're playing mono red.
Yeah.
It's like a opponent-only Armageddon.
Yeah.
It's just like when you have the Avacyn and you Armageddon, you're like, haha, my stuff's fine. You're just like, Runation? I have 9 mountains in play. I don't lose anything.
Yeah.
Everyone else lost at least 4 or 5.
Yeah, I think the only douchey type of Armageddon card I play in any of my decks is Zozu, and I'm playing Decree of Annihilation. Because.
Oh, that card sucks so bad.
Yes, it does. My Zozu deck has one way of surefire winning and beating everybody if the cards are right. Because this combo in my, it's not really a combo, but this synergy in my Zozu deck to make it work requires a lot of things to go right.
Mm-hmm.
I have to have Zozu in play. I have to have a way of when Zozu deals damage, I gain that much life. I have to have, I have to have that card that if anyone plays a tap to land during when it's not their turn, they lose thing. I have to have damage doublers. Everything has to go right for this to work, but I have had it work once.
I got the really good early start and got all that stuff out, and then went to cycle Decree of Annihilation and hold off on laying my lands to destroy everybody else's land. And then just I was purposely holding basic lands in my hand, holding back on land drops, so I could go Decree of Annihilation. Everybody's land is destroyed, but my board was set. So if you played land, you were taking like 3 times the amount of damage. You were getting hit for 6 every time you laid a land. So I won that game off of that. But for Zozu to work like that, there's about a million things I have to go right to make that happen. Mm-hmm. So I don't even consider it being really mean, because it's not going to happen that often.
And I just want to bring something up. For the listeners out there who have to deal with decks like Zozu, a.k.a. Dix, there's this really cool white card out there, and I used this on Nate, and it was hilarious.
Which one was it?
Michiko Konda.
Oh, yeah.
And she states that whenever an opponent deals damage to you,
that could suck.
They have to sack a permanent.
That was a fun game, though.
So, Zozu said, each opponent who lays a land loses life. Well, I'm going to play a land. They have to sack a permanent when they make me lose life.
Yeah, that was awesome. Like, that was still a fun game to play, even though I lost early.
And then, Mana Barb, tap a land, I take a damage, they sack a permanent.
Yeah, that's
super fun.
Yeah, that was a fun game to play. Like,
Wait, what? Mana Barb? You take a damage?
No. How does Mana Barb interact with that card?
Every time you tap a land, it's 1 damage.
I don't know, what is the other card, the white card you're talking about?
Michiko Konda?
Yeah.
When you take damage, whoever did the damage to you has to sack a permanent?
Yeah, they're each individual. They're individual damage sources.
Sorry, I was confused. I thought you were saying you control
the mana
marks. And I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. That wouldn't work.
Right? No, yeah, well, he just taps the land and just takes 1 for every land, and I just get hurt. Yeah, that game was, I lost horribly in that game, but it was still a lot of fun to play, because I'm just like, yeah, well,
you scooped, is what happened.
Eventually I had no choice. I stuck it out as long as I could, but eventually I couldn't do it anymore. I had to, normally I'm not one to like to scoop, I held out as long as I possibly could, and I fought really hard in that game to keep and stay in it, but
I remember that.
Eventually I ran out of tricks.
Yeah, they didn't let you do anything.
Yeah, I ran out of tricks eventually.
Like,
and
land hate, die.
Yeah. And you know what? I walked away from that game and like, yep, I deserved every bit of that. That's fine. So, but yeah, that's kind of cool. We found that, I found those 2 cards. Did you guys find anything else? I know Alex had a bunch of cards that he wanted to bring up, but because he's working on a cube now too.
Mm-hmm.
But he'll probably, we'll have it next week when he's on, if he's not this week.
No, I think I'm going to talk about one of the interesting cards I found for my cube.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking for a card that was blue that had a red activation cost in it of some sort, because I was doing some work or whatever. And it's a card called Jilt.
That card's amazing, actually. I know what you're talking about. You see it in my Popper Cube.
Apocalypse, I think?
Yeah.
It's something like that. It's 1 colorless, 1 blue, and it's got a 1 colorless, 1 red kicker. And the spell is, it's an unsummon. It's a 2-mana unsummon, which is fine. But when you kick it, you also get to deal 2 damage to another target creature.
Yep, you get
to
shock. Yeah. It's a bounce and a shock in one card.
So for 2 colorless, a red and a blue, it bounce that thing, kill that thing.
Yeah. I used to play that in my Popper Cube. It was really, really good. Like, honest to God truth, out of every card I had in the Popper, my Popper Cube back when it was together, it was one of the top 6 cards I always drafted.
Okay, that's good to know. Because I liked it, and I saw it on paper, but I'm like, that's...
Jilt was one of the top 10 cards I always drafted for my cube. Like, as soon as we'd play, it was like, because we drafted, when I had my Popper Cube, we drafted that one a lot. Mm-hmm. And, like, every time we would start, it was, literally, you'd have 2 or 3 people going, all right, where's the Jilt? Because that card is, there's so much value in that card. So, but yeah, I'll add a link to that so people can see that. For shout-outs, this shout-out is like 2 weeks old. 3 weeks old, actually. Sean Swenson, again, one of our judges, noted that Cloudstone Cure doesn't work on a Thuriumhorn Sorcerer or Shardless Agent because they're non-artifact only. Yeah, that makes sense. Cloudstone Cure is just a really cool card. I like that card. I think it does cool stuff. But, yeah, so there's that. Do you guys have anything else you want to say?
I forgot to mention at the start of the show.
Yeah.
During my what did I do? But I'm a judge now.
You are a judge now.
I'm a
Yay!
Judge now.
I
passed my exam last weekend.
Was it hard?
Sweet. I figured it wouldn't
it
be that hard for you to pass it.
Wasn't it terrible?
Do you think I could do it?
Maybe.
I don't know.
I heard.
Have you done any of the practice ones?
Yeah, I have.
I heard the test actually got simplified. It used to be really, really hard, and now it's got simplified.
Yeah, well, it's
not as hard anymore.
Yeah, it depends on how far back you had to go, because they added more levels, so the levels needed to know less.
Yeah,
that's cool. I can do stuff. Like, I can judge F&Ms and stuff, and if I wanted to, like, I can be a floor judge at a GP, I think.
Well, that, and any time we do an event at our store, you could do it, too.
Yeah.
Which you're probably going to end up doing.
I'm tempted to get it just to get it. Or, I mean, attempt to get it, I should say.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
I don't know.
Like, it's...
Just when you play mediation, those people that are like, oh, this card works
like
that.
Oh, my God.
And I know it doesn't.
Yeah.
I can just be like, no, it doesn't, and I'm a judge.
Yeah. Listen to me.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. No, I think there's been an uproar of that lately. I think every night we've had EDH on Thursday, there's always a stupid judge call because someone's arguing over a play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that happens all the time.
Too.
I know. Yeah.
We've had a Chatton.
I've seen Chatton Hyde, though.
Chatton, Danny, Sean, and you that I know of right now that are level one judges.
Yep.
Yeah. So, but yes, we have a judge in our podcast now. Yay. Anything else other than that you guys want to bring up?
Yeah. I feel like I want to say stay frosty, my friends. Cause that commercial's on all the time.
Stay frosty.
I have a few shout-outs. I'm going to shout out, if you're looking for alt art tokens and such and cards, go on eBay, or you can go through their website to get custom work done. MTG Altered, their work is absolutely amazing. Pretty cool stuff. And, the other I want to mention, I mentioned that I've been starting to play Dice Masters. If anyone is curious about it and want to try it, other than playing Magic, you're interested in other games too, check out DFW Dice Masters, Dallas Fort Worth Dice Masters. It's a group of guys that do that, and they're very. I've been listening to their show, and it's pretty good. But yeah, check them out. But other than that, till next week. I'm Nate.
And I'm Brandon.
I'm Chris.
For the last time.
I miss y'all.
Well, you're always welcome to come back on or if you have some free time. So
I will.
That's the invitation is open always. This has been Commanders HQ.
Unleash the fury, Mitch. Unleash the fury. Come on, Mitch. Eat him.
Please, Mitch. Go get him, boy. He's right there. Kill him. Maim him. Bite him.
Unleash the fury!